Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, on August the 12th, 1946, an aircraft took off from Paris bound for Dublin. Aboard were a French Girl Guide troop, but due to a violent storm, the plane crashed in the Wicklow Mountains. Dublin assumed the plane had turned back to France. France assumed that the plane had landed safely in Ireland. So it was up to the girls themselves to be rescued. Bill Nelson is the author of a booklet that tells this remarkable story. Bill, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
How's it going? Now, how many Girl Guides were on board this plane, and what ages
were?
There
was 21. Yeah, 21, and they aged between 13 and 21 years of age. Yeah, so they were for a troop from mostly the north of France, Paris, and further north, in an area very much ravaged by the occupation by the Nazis during the Second World War.
Yeah, and of course it was just after the Second World War. So they were coming to Ireland. They had been invited to come.
Yeah, they were invited with another group from Holland who were also badly touched by the Second World War. And the Dutch girls came on a ferry and a train and a bus and all that kind of thing and made it. But the French girls were offered an aircraft by the French Air Force, the Armée de l'Air. And they gladly took it. And they left from Le Bourget at 9 o'clock on the 12th of August. Yeah.
Yeah. And when did they start to run into bad weather?
Okay, so they made the normal crossing, which would have been off the north coast of France, across the Channel and England and Wales, and they were about halfway across the Irish Sea, and they gave an estimated time of arrival into Dublin by communication. And sometime after that, they actually, about a half an hour actually, and they should have been in Dublin Airport, they gave another estimated time of arrival, and then they lost communication. Now, there was huge consternation at the time because initially, the ATC in Dublin thought they'd turned back, and the French ATC thought they'd gone and made their final destination. But the speculation started to mount when, you know, there was no word from them at all. And they actually tried to launch a search and rescue aircraft from Dublin Airport, but the weather was too bad because they'd convinced that they'd gone into the Irish Sea. Would have been a dreadful tragedy altogether. And of course, this information was communicated to the Irish Girl Guides. And you can imagine how they felt when they thought that all souls were gone.
Oh my word.
So it was a dreadful situation, but they didn't. They survived.
This terrible, and it seemed to be in a very fierce storm. Did it blow
it
them?
It was ferocious.
Yeah. Did it blow them off course? Did they know where they were?
It blew them off course, but the wind, like a lot of wind in Ireland, comes from the northwest, and it blew them down south of Dublin Airport. Now, there was a bit of confusion in the cockpit. They had a navigator, they also had a radio officer, and then the crew, the captain and the first officer, who were all military people. They'd all seen service during the Second World War, and they were flying an aircraft that they were familiar with. So there was a bit of confusion, and the captain knew that he should be heading north because that's what his compass was telling him. Dublin Airport was north. But he was actually flying in the Wicklow Mountains, and he didn't know it. And that's the reason that they lost communication, because even today, sometimes it's a bit tricky for radio communication. If you're going down the N11, you'll actually lose the signal. You might have to change the frequency. And the same thing happened. And that they were going through the Wicklow Mountains, unknown, because the cloud base was about 300 feet, which is nothing in mountains, you know. So, like, he really was in trouble, and he didn't know it, which is just as well, I suppose.
Yeah, and it sounds like, from your description, that it was like that scene in a film where, you know, you emerge out of a cloud and then there's a bloody great mountain in front of you.
Well, it was exactly like that. And the only thing is, he never emerged. He hit a mountain. He hit Joust. And the issue really, like I call the booklet A Miracle on Joust, and it was an absolute miracle. There were several avenues that brought them that way. And in the Wicklow Mountains, there's 39 peaks over 600 metres. There's only three passes that you can actually get through if you can see where you're going, right? And he almost made it. Had he made it over Joust, he would have made it to Dublin Airport. But he didn't. He hit Joust about 100 metres below the summit, which is 710 meters, right? So he missed all these other mountains around the place and hit Jauce. So, like, the first he knew about it was, like, he was in really thick cloud, and he actually descended slightly to see could he get out of the cloud, and it was then when he hit the mountain, right? Mm. So up he went, the aircraft. I mean, as I say, like, it was a miracle that he actually found himself there. But the fact that he hit a nice, like, peaty heat kind of base or surface, and the aircraft bounced, the undercarriage was ripped off. He lost the engines en route, and then it actually hit the ground a second time. And there's a woman that I got to know very, very well, Chantal de Vitry was her name, before she got married, Chantal Lacroix afterwards. And she actually told me what happened. You know, I know, I mean, there's been two books written on the case. Suzanne Barnes wrote a really good book. It was published in 2005. And then a French woman called Catherine Pizon wrote the English version of it. And that was published in 2018. But before that, even, I wrote an article in 1996 to commemorate the 50th anniversary. And I thought that was it. I said, right, okay. It was like a project I had. I said, right, I had a bit of the aircraft that had been given to me by a very good friend of mine called Brian Siggins, who was a local historian in Dublin. And that was what spurred me on to write the article for the 50th anniversary. And it was published in the Wicklow Times. And unknown to me, after the article was published, people in Wicklow who'd actually stayed in touch with the girls, they were involved in the in the rescue on Jauce. They actually cut the article old style out of the newspaper, out of the Wicklow Times, and posted it to their friends in France. And, you know, I mean, this was all of a sudden, it just reawakened the whole episode. And 11 of the women who are now in their 60s and 70s, of course, came back and made an attempt to get up Jauce as well. So, like, huh. I mean, it was, and then lots of stuff. Then Suzanne Barnes wrote the book, and then Catherine Pizon. And I was lucky enough to be asked to contribute in a small way to both of their publications. Yeah. So
just to go back to the crash, Bill, because it seemed to have been, a combination of skill and luck. He seemed to have hit Jauce at exactly the right angle, so the plane didn't disintegrate.
Yeah, no. I mean, it was a Junkers 52. Junkers had been making airplanes since the First World War, in fact, in Bremen in Germany. But they'd been trying to improve. Between the wars, There was an upsurge in commercial activity, and one of the factors they really had to look after was safety. And a guy by the name of Ernst Indahl was an engineer who designed this aircraft, and it's actually a corrugated aluminium fuselage and wings, which gives flexibility and strength. And it stayed intact, Sean. That was the amazing thing about it, because even though the weather was absolutely brutal, after they crashed, okay, there was a lot of injuries because the airplane hit the mountain. The girls weren't strapped in. It was in a military configuration. Oh. All their haversacks were down in the aisles, and they were all thrown forward. All the forces that you have with gravity and momentum and velocity and everything threw all the girls forward, right, for a couple of seconds. And Chantal said all of a sudden then they were all thrown back because the airplane left the ground again momentarily. And then all the forces react quicker than anything else, and they were all thrown back. And then it hit a second time, and then it slewed along the mountain on an upward incline, which was important because it was sucking the energy out of the aircraft, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
when it stopped eventually, like, they, you know, there was moans and groans, there was broken legs, very badly injured faces, you know, because they hit walls and ceilings and everything of this aircraft. And Chantal got out of the aircraft, and she looked back. She was relatively uninjured. She bruised ribs. She looked back and she said, "Il était un miracle," and that's why I called it. And the booklet is bilingual.
Yeah,
so it's in English and French.
And from that point, when she got out of the plane, they decided to go and look for help. How long did it take them to find help? And did they even know what direction to go in?
No, 7 hours. Right, it took 7 hours. Right, and it was dreadful weather. Right now, there was another girl, Monique Bonnet, and the captain. Now, the captain was limping badly, but he felt duty-bound to at least contribute something. And he had his compass in his hand. He was heading north, because that's where Dublin was, but heading north made him climb, right? So Chantal said, "Oh, hang on for a minute. You know, we're not climbing. There's no houses up there. you know, let's, and they couldn't see a thing, like they were just going on instinct. So she climbed down, the three of them climbed down, her colleague, Mademoiselle Bonnet, she fell into a hole and nearly drowned. They had to haul her out because there was that much rain. And, you know, everything was completely sodden. And they eventually made it down to a cottage. And then they were brought to the Mount Mullen Hotel, which was called, which is at the base of Mullen, the mountain. And that was run by a family called the Hogans. And Chantal was the only one that could actually go from the cottage to the, she was the only one fit enough to go. And the occupant of the cottage brought her to the Mount Mullen Hotel. And she literally fell in the door, exhausted, but she fell into the arms of an Austrian woman who could speak French. So, I mean, talk about the luck staying with you.
Mm.
And then, of course, you know, she was able to say, and you know, an air crash? Where? When? How? Why? All the questions. And they pieced together the information. Luckily, the captain, he had a handheld compass with him. And when he came across something, whether it was a fence or a wall or a big rock or something like that, he made a note of it, right? So, like, they were able to piece together the guards from Enniskerry and Roundwood, two senior sergeants, took control, and they basically got all the people who had cars, motorbikes, you name it, vans, the lot, right? Before the ambulances could get up, and then they scoured the mountains. And based on the information that the captain was able to give them, they, you know, they picked three likely lads, shepherds and poachers, you know, on the land of Oranmore and Brown, you know, and they found them first. They found them, and they still only found them by the they could have walked by them because the cloud and the mist cleared for about 2 seconds, right?
Yeah.
And they saw the fuselage in front of them, and then it clamped again, right? But at the same time, those girls looking out the windows, and they said they saw them too, and they said, "Oh, les sauveteurs sont là." The rescuers are here. And that's when it started.
That's extraordinary.
It is extraordinary. Yeah. And of course, the girls, actually being girl guides, would have had whistles.
Yes.
Right? So once there was somebody knocking around, then that you could help them. I mean, knocking around is not exactly an expression. once they were there and they were going to help, they started blowing their whistles like mad. The lads moved within, you know, away from the aircraft because it was a smell of fuel, right? And there's no way they were going to light a fire. But they lit a fire a good bit away, but near enough that anybody else who was in the area could see them. And that's when the whole thing. So it was like, so the 7 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah.
And then the rescue operation took till midnight.
Bill, yeah. I look forward to the movie version of your book.
And the book.
And the book. Bill, thanks a million for talking about talking with us about that today. That's called A Miracle on Juice. It's called Someone Sexing In to Say It's Available for Sale from the Irish Girl Guides for €5.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.